Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is March 7th, 2015, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is I Saw the Signs of Angioedema, and we have a guest skeptic, Dr. Eric Schneider. Eric is a community emergency physician in Kansas City, Missouri, who has a drive to bring the most pragmatic, evidence-based, and cost-effective care to his patients at an inner-city trauma hospital. He's a father of three, married to a pathologist, and an avid musician. Welcome to the SGEM, Eric.
Hi, thanks for having me here, Ken. I'm really excited.
Well, you have to tell me, how did you end up getting to be a guest skeptic?
Well, kind of a first-time caller, long-time listener sort of thing, but I had come across a paper in the New England Journal, and I was wanting to get your opinion on the matter to see if it's something I should be including, because you guys are doing such a good job in educating us on how to use these papers that are being published. And you asked me if I would want to be a part of it, and I reluctantly said yes.
Well, I appreciate it. And if you're listening and you read an interesting paper and want a critical appraisal done, hey, send me an email, thesgem@gmail.com, and who knows, you too could be a guest skeptic. But you know what? I want to find a little bit more about Eric.
I grew up in Nebraska, trained at the University of Nebraska Med Center, worked in the community around Omaha for a year after that. And then my wife took us up to the Mayo Clinic Health System, where I worked in the rural hospital in Minnesota while she did her pathology fellowship. Then her job brought us down to Kansas City, where I'm loving the change in acuity from the farmers and the snotty-nosed kids to the gunshot wounds and people with no access to health care. It's been a big step up.
Well, there is a big difference between rural and urban emergency medicine.
It's impressive, and it keeps me on my toes.
Well, let's keep you on your toes right now with launching into a case scenario. So what do you got for me, Eric?
Well, working in an inner city ER in Kansas City, I see a lot of African Americans, and I see a lot of older African Americans, and a lot of them have high blood pressure. So our case today is a 65-year-old African American male who presents to the emergency department complaining of swelling of the tongue. It had started at about 8:30 in the morning. He had gone to an urgent care where he was treated with steroids and Benadryl, as well as subcutaneous epinephrine. The swelling did not get any better. He was transferred to the emergency department. By the time you see him, the swelling had started about 4 hours prior. He states he's had no change in the swelling. On examination, his vital signs are normal. There's no stridor, no respiratory distress, and no hypoxia. But he does have a very swollen tongue and slightly flared feet, like he's having a hard time keeping his tongue behind his teeth. He has a history of high blood pressure, and the only medication he takes is the ACE inhibitor, lisinopril.
So, Eric, I have seen some people who come in with that slightly swollen tongue on an ACE inhibitor.
All right, so let's talk about ACE inhibitors. Angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitors, or ACE inhibitors, like lisinopril, were approved by the FDA back in the 1980s. ACE inhibitors are common medications used for hypertension, congestive heart failure, post-myocardial infarction, chronic kidney disease, and diabetic nephropathy.
They inhibit the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system. Angiotensinogen is converted to angiotensin 1 by renin. Angiotensin 1 is then converted to angiotensin 2 by angiotensin-converting enzyme that is mainly produced in the lung.
Yeah, and angiotensin 2 has a lot of biological effects. It can increase blood vessel resistance, increase aldosterone, increase thirst, increase antidiuretic hormone, increase vascular hypertrophy, and increase noradrenaline.
Right, and angiotensin-converting enzyme also breaks down bradykinin. So if you block ACE with an ACE inhibitor, you can get a buildup of bradykinin. ACE inhibitors have side effects like all biologic agents. Because it lowers blood pressures, patients can get hypotension, causing people to be weak or dizzy and even have syncope.
Yeah, do you have people saying they're, I'm weak, doctor, I'm weak and dizzy?
Sometimes.
All right, so hypokalemia is another well-recognized side effect of ACE inhibitors. Urinary potassium excretion is stimulated by aldosterone, and ACE inhibitors decrease aldosterone. The estimated incidence of hyperkalemia secondary to ACE inhibitors use is approximately 3%.
And then there is the classic ACE inhibitor cough.
Oh, yeah. The cough.
This is thought to happen in 5 to 35% of patients. This chronic dry cough could start after the first dose, but interestingly, can not show up for weeks, months, or even years.
Yeah, I've seen people who said, yeah, I've been on this medication for years. Why am I coughing now? Nobody knows the exact mechanism by which ACE inhibitors cause this cough, but it's thought to be due to an increased concentration of bradykinin, substance P, prostaglandins, and thromboxane. Stopping the ACE inhibitor is the treatment, but you know what? The cough can persist for months in some patients.
The buildup of the bradykinin is also thought to be the mechanism behind the angioedema. The incidence of angioedema is seen in up to 0.7% of users, and it's usually self-limited and has a very low fatality rate. The angioedema occurs in the mucosal tissue of the tongue, lips, eyes, GI tract, or genitalia that have the rich capillary blood supply.
And an interesting fact about this angioedema is it's up to 5 times more common in those of African descent.
I know I've seen the difference between working in rural Minnesota, where I don't think I saw one of these cases over a year, to working in urban Kansas City, where I've seen 3 of these since I read this paper in January. Angioedema can be divided up into 2 main types. There's your allergic histamine-mediated angioedema, the insect bites, the foods, and the drug allergies. There's the fast onset with pruritus, the rash, and the potential systemic effects that goes along with this. And this usually responds to your anaphylaxis therapy, including your antihistamines, the steroids, and of course, epinephrine.
Yeah, and in contrast, the second main type is the non-allergic angioedema. And this includes the hereditary angioedema, or HAE, and of course, the ACE inhibitor angioedema. It's usually much more gradual on onset. It's not as itchy. There's not much of a rash, and it affects mainly the face, the GI tract, and the genitalia. And it responds poorly to the standard anaphylaxis therapy.
Again, most patients with the ACE inhibitor-induced angioedema will have mild swelling or of the lips, and they won't have any airway obstruction and will resolve within several hours after stopping the drug.
And antihistamines and steroids are often given to these patients, especially in the more serious cases of ACE inhibitor angioedema, but they probably do not have much impact, if any, because the problem, it's a bradykinin-mediated problem.
And so there's a drug out there called icatibant, which is a bradykinin type 2 receptor antagonist, which is labeled for use with hereditary angioedema. It blocks bradykinin receptor, resulting in a rapid reduction of the edema and can prevent the need for intubating patients with significant airway involvement. This is usually meant for the complement C1 esterase inhibitor deficiency syndromes.
Icatibant, is it made by Apple?
No, made by a drug company. This is Spire, I believe.
I just thought every word that started with I had to be, you know, produced by Steve Jobs and the gang. Icatibant.
There may be some trademark infringement.
Oh, that's true too. Okay. So Eric, what's the clinical question we're trying to address on this podcast?
Is icatibant of any benefit in ACE inhibitor-associated angioedema?
And what reference do you have for this?
There's a study that just came out in the New England Journal of Medicine in January 2015 by Bass et al. I have no idea if I'm saying that correctly. It was a randomized trial of icatibant in ACE inhibitor-induced angioedema.
So you haven't been on the podcast, but you've listened to the podcast, so you know that we frame this with a PICO statement: the population, the intervention, the comparison, and the outcome. So what was the population in this study?
Well, these were German emergency department patients. They had a total of 27 patients between the ages of 18 and 95 who were on ACE inhibitors and exhibited angioedema affecting the upper airway and digestive tract after excluding those with other causes of angioedema.
Yeah, and so they excluded anyone who had a history of angioedema before they were on an ACE inhibitor, acute urticaria, acute myocardial ischemia, unstable angina, acute heart failure, New York Heart Classification 3 or 4, pregnant patients, or lactating women. So what was the intervention?
Well, they gave 30 milligrams of icatibant in a subcutaneous fashion.
And what did they compare it to, Eric?
What they called standard care was intravenous prednisolone, 500 milligrams, and clomastine, 2 milligrams. Clomastine I was not familiar with and had to look that one up. It's a first-generation antihistamine.
All right, so what were their primary outcomes?
Well, the primary outcome was the median time to complete resolution of the edema as evaluated by investigator-assessed and patient-assessed symptom scores.
And they had some secondary outcomes, and this was the proportion of patients who did not have a response to treatment, a proportion of patients with complete resolution of edema at 4 hours, and the time of onset to symptom relief.
In terms of managing the safety in this as an outcome, they wanted to check the incidence of and the time to rescue intervention, reporting of the adverse events, and documentation of the local injection site reactions, measurements of vital signs, as well as clinical laboratory testing.
So here's the actual conclusions from the author. Quote, among patients with ACE inhibitor-induced angioedema, the time to complete resolution of edema was significantly shorter with icatibant than with other combination therapies with a glucocorticoid and an antihistamine. End of quote. So, Eric, let's run through the quality checklist of 11 questions for randomized clinical trials. Question number one, is this study population focused on emergency department patients?
It was.
Were the patients randomized adequately?
Yes, they were.
Number three, did they conceal the randomization?
No. The investigators who were responsible for randomization, study drug administration, and assessment of injection site reactions were aware of the study assignments.
Question number four, the patients, were they analyzed in the groups to which they were randomized?
Yes. In the case of three patients, the decision to administer treatment was made by the investigator before randomization, but these patients were excluded from the results.
How about recruitment? Did they recruit patients consecutively?
I'm unsure. They did not explicitly state that consecutive patients were recruited. In addition, the three patients were excluded from analysis because physician treatment prior to randomization. It makes me wonder if other patients were excluded from enrollment.
Question six. The patients in both groups, were they similar with respect to prognostic factors?
Mostly they were. The standard group was a bit older, and there was a mixture of ACE inhibitors. I don't know if that is going to have any outcome on this.
Were all the participants unaware of their group allocation?
No. The investigators who were responsible for randomization, study drug administration, and assessment of the injection site reactions were aware of the study assignments.
I think you mentioned that before. Okay, how about this one? All groups were treated equally except for the intervention.
Yes.
So question number nine, was follow-up complete?
No, 4 of 14, or 29% of the standard therapy, lost to 14-day follow-up.
Yeah, and we like to see at least 80% in both groups. Number 10, all patient-important outcomes, were they considered?
No. What we didn't know was if there was need for airway management, admission to the hospital, other costs noted.
All right, and the final question, the treatment effect, was it large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
Yes, this study was powered at 90% to meet their expected difference with a p-value of less than 0.05.
All right, so let's go through the result. What was their primary result, Eric?
The primary outcome with the median time to complete resolution was 8 hours for icatibant versus 27 hours for standard care.
And how about their secondary outcomes?
Well, they had a complete resolution of edema at 4 hours after treatment with 5 of the 13 patients for icatibant and none of the 14 for standard care. The median time to onset of symptom relief was 2 hours for icatibant and 11 hours for usual care.
And you had mentioned safety, so what were their safety findings?
Well, three of the patients in the standard therapy group required a rescue therapy, and of these, one needed a tracheotomy. There were some minor injection site reactions with redness and swelling and pain.
Yeah, so what I'll do is I'll put up the table from their actual article onto the show notes for people to see. But let's start some of the commentary. First of all, this was a very small study of only 27 patients using icatibant for an off-label use of ACE inhibitor-induced angioedema. Here are five things to consider when evaluating this study. The first thing, let's talk about the consecutive enrollment.
That's interesting how you got to five things to consider here, Ken.
You wonder.
The first concern was consecutive enrollment, which is not clear in this study. It's important to minimize your selection bias.
Yeah, they report three patients had treatment initiated before randomization. Were there other patients that were either too sick or not sick enough excluded? They did remove these patients from the efficacy data set and did a per-protocol analysis.
And the other point I would make about enrollment is all the patients were Caucasian. ACE inhibitor angioedema being 5 times more common in patients of African descent makes me wonder if they would respond differently to icatibant.
All right, so the second issue then is blinding.
The study was partially unblinded. Specifically, the study drug administrators and the assessors of injection site reactions knew which group patients were assigned. Why were they not blinded? This could introduce some bias when determining whether the drug or saline subcutaneous injection caused a local reaction.
However, the patients and the investigators who assessed the efficacy outcome were blinded to treatment group.
Yeah, but it was an ENT specialist doing endoscopy to grade the angioedema. This is not who will be assessing patients in my shop.
Yeah, we do not have an ENT doc coming down to assess angioedema in my shop either. All right, the third point, what about patient-oriented outcomes? The time to complete resolution, 8 hours versus 27 hours, that's a 19-hour difference. But is that important to the patients? What about median time to onset of symptom relief? It was 2 hours versus 12 hours.
And what about intubation or death? This was a much too small study, which they acknowledged, to assess these rare but very important patient-oriented safety outcomes.
Yeah, and what about the need for admission to hospital? This might be a very important patient outcome.
And what about cost? This drug is very expensive, between $5,000 and $10,000 for a single dose. Talk about a very expensive drug to use when most cases are mild, self-limiting, and resolve in hours and rarely result in airway compromise.
Yeah, there's a very, very big risk here of indication creep. So everybody who comes in with facial swelling will be treated with this drug rather than those rare patients heading towards an airway obstruction. But the fourth point I wanted to bring up was this idea of usual care. The standard care was IV steroids, prednisolone, and an antihistamine.
I wish they had included epinephrine, because if someone's crashing or I'm not sure if it's ACE inhibitor versus anaphylaxis, I might give the epinephrine a try. And we also might consider using FFP.
All right, let's talk about number five here. This was a funded study by Shire.
Shire did not have a role in the study design. However, Shire did review and provide comments on the manuscript before submission for publication.
Yeah, and Eric, just because a study is pharma-funded does not mean the results are wrong. But I gotta tell you, it does raise my skeptical radar. But let's compare our discussion to the author's conclusions. What do you think?
Icatibant had significantly shorter time to symptom improvement and resolution of edema. What I don't know is if this therapy will prevent intubation or surgical airways. I can't generalize to a population of African descent who's disproportionately affected. And I can't necessarily generalize to standard care that may include epinephrine or fresh frozen plasma.
So, do you have some kind of SGEM bottom line that you want to give?
Sure. Icatibant is an expensive drug that appears to work well for the off-label use of ACE inhibitor-induced angioedema, but should be reserved for those rare cases of impending airway compromise.
And how about giving us a case resolution of that man who came in to the emergency department talking with a swollen tongue?
Over a few hours, his swelling had not gone down with the epinephrine, steroids, or antihistamines. He had no respiratory distress. He was not intubated as he had been stable for hours. But given the severity of the tongue swelling, he was admitted for observation with a trach kit at the bedside, and ENT and anesthesiology were aware of him. He did not deteriorate, did not require intubation, and went home the following day knowing not to take any more ACE inhibitors.
So Eric, how are you going to take this paper in the New England Journal of Medicine and apply it to your clinical practice?
Unfortunately, I am not able to use this clinically because it is not available where I work.
So what are you going to tell patients?
I will tell my patients that you have swelling of the tongue, which is likely caused by your medication, lisinopril. This can occur at any time after starting the medication. There's a medication that may decrease the swelling of your tongue, but I don't know if it will improve your breathing such that you don't need your airway protected. Harms of the medication may include pain at the site, swelling, itching, and redness. One dose of this medication can cost thousands of dollars.
And that sound reminds me that it's time for the Keener contest. Last week's winner was Dr. Hector Singson from Freeport, Bahamas. He knew that James Wright of the Wright staining method coined the term platelets. Now this is a back-to-back win for Hector, so he will be getting the double strength cool skeptical prize. Eric, what do you got for a Keener contest this week?
Well, what is the name of the first ACE inhibitor approved by the FDA for use in the United States in 1981?
If you know the answer and you want to prevent Hector from getting a hat trick...
Is that when you get like three elderly, dizzy patients in a row?
No. A hat trick is a term used when a hockey player scores three goals in one game. So if you want to prevent Hector from getting a hat trick, send an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first person to provide a correct answer will receive that cool skeptical prize. I just want to make an announcement about some conferences coming up. We've got the Rural and Remote Medicine course in Montreal, April 9th to 11th. And then there's the Steel Beam course in Hamilton, Ontario, April 20th to 21st. We'll be lighting the way at the Canadian Association of Emergency Physicians meeting in Edmonton, Alberta, May 30th to June 3rd. And then finally on this list is the SMAC Chicago Conference in Illinois, June 23rd to 26th. Eric, thank you for suggesting this paper and being a guest skeptic.
Thank you for having me on the Ask Jim Ken, and thank you for teaching us how to use these papers when they come out.
Well, it's my pleasure, and you know what I'm learning? I'm learning from having all these guest skeptics that there are so many great accents out there in the U.S. So you know what I'm going to ask you to do? I'm going to ask you to put on your thickest Nebraskan accent and give the SGEM tagline.
Well, that's strange. We don't tend to think we have an accent.
Of course not. And I don't have an accent either, eh, you hoser?
Well, remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.